Hi.
Hi, Victoria. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
It's a nice clear day today. I'm going to go for a 2-hour walk later.
That sounds nice.
What's it like there?
Well, it's a bit cold, but it's not bad. And we've got birdcage catching birdcages out yesterday, so there's a whole bunch of birds already today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Probably more birds up there than down here in the city.
Well, they seem to not be here until we put food out.
Well, that's maybe something I should do. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do this interview, Harold. Second try, as you know.
So,
obviously, I want to talk to you about the McClure Gallery show that's on now, An Artistic Dialogue, John Ewart and Harold Klender. And I know you've had a chance to look at the video that was done between Natasha and Paul, and it was really great.
I thought it was really good. Yeah. I phoned Paul and told him I thought it was good. He's so embarrassed. He said I kept groping my face and losing the camera. But all of that adds interest, in my opinion, you know.
I agree.
It's ad hoc. It's not a print shop with polished walls or, you know what I mean?
I think that's the charm of the print shop, that it's very much about, you know, getting your hands dirty and the ink's all over the place.
Yes, I think so, too.
So I guess one of the things that came up a lot in that interview and something that I thought you and I could talk a bit about is, you know, just that very idea of collaboration. And I know that's something, this isn't the first time that you've collaborated with an artist. I know you have a very disciplined studio art practice, but I also know that collaboration has been a part of your practice over a number of years. So why don't you just talk to us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I think I was always interested in sort of doing things that I didn't know how they would end up. You know, you just start something, and then when you're doing it with someone else, I think a lot of early work was with Catherine and I, just even outside of Niagara. You know, so Catherine would do performance, and I would do sound work for it, and she would react to the sound, or I would make sound according to how the performance was going. And so they're always mixed. Sound and performance is kind of... As a performer, it's a very quiet activity, but this adding sound is a different, creates a different situation. So,
and that apart from that sense of dialogue is what you were looking for.
Yeah. And even when we were doing Niagara, I mean, in many ways, it was like a noise band or a band that, you know, we had no actual real interest in making it into a song kind of situation and more, just letting venting, really, just, you know.
There's a better word. It's called improvisation rather than venting.
Yes.
But I know what you mean. Just so people also understand, I know that Niagara is banned that you had in the 80s, I think, in Toronto.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. And with other artists, it's always interesting because you kind of have to, it's kind of like when an artist does a collage and you're starting with things that are just found, you're collaborating with the materials in a sense, you know, so in a way I think when you're working with someone else, there's a lot of push and pull in the sense, you know, where the one person has one idea, the other has another idea, and then they somehow come together logically. Just part of it, I think, is knowing that person well.
Yes, I was going to say, I guess choosing who you improvise with, and in a sense, maybe this is like a segue into, you know, your relationship with John and how you were led to have this particular collaboration with John.
Yeah, I guess the impetus was essentially Paul having a studio. And so we did some sound work together just around the same time, but that was a sort of different thing. But again, it's never done with a music sheet or anything. It's just going into it, and then sometimes it works better than other times. But with a visual art, it's a very silent thing. Making art is actually very silent. The work speaks, but when you're doing it, it's only the sound of the brush moving or something. So But working with the, pardon?
I was just going to say, is there something about the print process also that facilitates collaboration in a sense? You know, two artists could paint together, but is there something about that print process, which is already social? Is there something about that that...
Yeah, I think it is essentially with printing, there's a third person who is actually the printer, and that's maybe the where it starts. But I think with John, I just felt I got along with him really well, because I don't know if it's a similar... he's kind of quiet, doesn't say a lot, and the words are very essential. He never goes on about weird things, or, you know, he's more or less very straightforward. And I can't really assess what I am. But anyway, I think we sort of hit it off in a sense where he likes my work and I like his work. So maybe that's often the beginning point. You kind of know something about that person. And and he's a rich, wonderful, he is, that's not fair to say he's gone, but unfortunately he's gone, but I think he had a really rich mind that he kept very private.
Yeah.
He really did.
And a very musical, I mean, as you know, he's part of a very street band for years and really known as an experimental drummer. And I think in the catalog that goes with the show, James actually doesn't, he emphasizes that. He calls it the elephant in the room about this collaboration.
Yeah.
That sense of music is very much, especially in the big Carborundum prints. So maybe what we could do is go through each of the collaborations.
Sure.
Because
sure.
in a sense, in the show, there's three of them. I think something I've mentioned to you before, that about the first one, which is their dry points, aren't they? Called Two Heads.
Mm-hmm.
And something I mentioned to you before was how both of you are known as abstract painters. I know you've often said that yourself wrongly so, but both of you have also done self-portraiture. In fact, I do recall at the McClure that we had a show of, along with Sylvia Sassy, John's partner, of I think they were prints also, that he'd also hand-worked on, large prints. That I think you could actually see in Paul's video yesterday. You could see a couple of them in the studio.
Yes, that's right, on the wall.
He had done self-portraiture in a very expressive, abstract way. And then you've often claimed that you always start your painting with the outline of the head. So in it, both of you have worked with this idea at some time or another of self-portraiture. And then in these very subtle dry points, which don't have color in them, unlike the other works. You know, you're working, as I said yesterday, a head at one at the top edge and another head, I guess John's and yours at the bottom, and all that white in between. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in the decisions taken around there.
Yeah, it's in a sense the view I have of it, it's kind of like a roll drum. And a roll drum is used to be in television where, you know, the thing rolls and the credits come along, you know. And it's a bit like that where the top and bottom, they kind of collide, but it's in a circular way. If you imagine how a globe looks, you know, the one head is going out the top, but it's coming back again at the bottom. So it's a circular feeling within a very flat sheet. And I think that both John and I took to that, because he put it on the edge and I put it on the edge. So, and the middle, whatever paint there is extremely subtle, almost like dust falling on a sheet of paper in some places. Yeah. You know, it's very, very, and in a way, it's placed the way we want it to be placed, but on the other hand, there's a certain amount of things you don't want to control. If something falls from the brush, you make that work.
What I saw looking at them, in a sense, I felt that the space between was, there was conversation going on in the space between a head above and a head below, like a dialogue,
Yes, that's right.
Or as you were talking about, the role where they're leading kind of behind the scenes as they go back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess the big, the central feature of the show is the attach and hold series that was done with John between 2017 and 2018. And these are very large, colorful cover and imprints that then you both, I think, also hand-inked or painted. And then you, again, went over it with watercolor. So I think everybody's interested in hearing, you know, that's quite a process over a two-year period. So let's talk about that.
I think initially it was just kind of finding the paper, not finding it, but sort of, Paul essentially found the paper, but we knew we wanted it to be quite large. It's just, it made sense just to have it be like a painting, even though it's essentially would be called a print. Mm-hmm. The printing is only, is a third of it. The rest is sort of improvised around it in a sense. And from when John did his marks, which essentially are very elemental, almost like minimal sculpture, and they often look like sculpture, and I've always liked that in his work, where there's a quality of solidity, and it either hangs well from the ceiling or sits hard on the floor, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a certain kind of feeling to the work that is difficult to describe. It's an experience you feel when you look at it. And,
well, especially when you can walk around it. I know some of the works that hang from the ceiling at the Darling.
Yeah. And other works that I've seen where he's just put steel hoops one beside the other, like where you can kind of sense the motion by looking at it, but they're called to a kind of still place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They sit on the floor and they don't move, you know. But on the other hand, there's a curve in it or something that translates into it giving it life. So I think that was always very, I don't know, I was taken by the work just, and I'm not always sure why, you know, how things grab you and then they take hold. And
also sometimes the opposite of what one's own aesthetic is particularly attracts us. And I guess that's something that, again, is reflected in what you named this series, Catch and Hold, and it's also reflected in the title that was chosen for the catalog, taken actually from Jane Campbell's essay, about contrapoint or counterpoint or contrapuntal, this idea of two different aesthetics playing off each other. So you've got John's black bass note sort of laid down, and then you moving, dialoguing around it with
that was at first I didn't know quite how to deal with it, but I thought the best way is to do what I would normally do, just to, in a sense, react to, because they're sort of like the bones.
Yeah.
And what I would do is work around it, enhancing that, you know, and bringing it forward or letting it fall into the work, or, you know, there's a certain amount of control both ways, because in a sense, John lays down the law and then trying to scurry around the fence.
It is true, because although there's a lot of your color and movement around that, especially where the rectangle is in the center, it really holds down the space, doesn't it?
And
you have to negotiate.
Yeah, and the fact that it's, and they're black, so that's the other thing. So black, it really invites you to see it as a deep space, not something that raises above the paper, but, so light colors beside it really give depth to the black, and I guess black, he used some deep gray as well, so it wasn't all black exactly, but and when I saw it, I just loved it. I thought, wow, this is something I could work with, you know.
And also, a couple of places, it's not a solid black. It's almost like there was a dry brush.
Yeah, he actually used a roller, like a conventional roller for painting a wall, and then would put the ink on or acrylic paint. And then he could roll it as gentle as he wanted or push hard. And some of it was tape, this physical masking tape or something that could then, when it was printed.
And why do you think the carborundum was used? Did you enjoy using that? There's wonderful photos, I'm sure you've seen them, of you and John, and particularly of you working, I guess you're working the carborundum, are you? Is laying it down?
Yeah, it's essentially acrylic with a powder, and I don't know the exact makeup of it, but I had done this before with Agathe and, at a different print shop in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of got me thinking that texture is, in print, texture is usually not acceptable because it's a flat sheet that goes through a hard press. But with that on it, it's, and the edge of the paper was a big influence because it's irregular, it's not machine cut, it's made and pulled off a screen. And so the fact that it's like that made it possible to think about how to deal with the edge. So, and there's a raised quality which is not apparent when you see it in a photo, but in reality, if it's on a wall and you're walking by it, that the carborundum is something that is raised away from the surface where everything else is flat. So in a sense, the black goes very deep,
mm-hmm.
John's black, and the carborundum is really something that sits up.
Yeah, I
in
have
physical
to say
space.
It is, and I agree with you that when you see images of them, I've seen them in Paul's studio, they mm-hmm. are 4 by 3 feet, I believe, or 40 by
yeah.
30. And so when you're standing in front of them, they really have a strong physical presence, like a painting,
mm-hmm.
and there
yeah.
gives that sense of texture, which, as you say, is really unusual in a print.
Yeah.
They really have a physicality to them that is really unusual. And also, I think, because of the watercolor, also gives it that
yeah.
sense, you know.
In yesterday's, in Paul's talk, he talks about me working with burlap bags, and that influenced him to sort of create something that was raised. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
If
yeah,
that.
I do remember that, and I do remember seeing those burlap bags in your studio and thinking, how the heck are you going to paint on those? And I saw the sculpt, but the texture is really, the physical presence and the texture is what stands out when you see those burlap pieces. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a certain kind of part of the interest.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say part of it is there's a social experience goes on when three people are in the shop, and Milo was there too, of course, the latter part. And that's a big thing too, because we laugh and we sort of think, oh, that does that work? And then we talk to each other about things, and it's not simply just quietly doing work, you know. It's like,
well,
we walk around a bit and then come back to it, or, you know, it was actually very kinetic.
But there was time, I guess the printing process also allows for time in between. You know, you have to pull the one and then you add to it. And that you use the word dent, but the word that keeps on coming back to me, it's really the improvisational aspect seems so dominant, especially the way you all worked. I think Paul is experimental. I think he really enjoys that experimental ethos, and I know John did for sure, and I know you do. So I think that comes out in the work and in the images that we see of you working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're really great. I guess I also want to talk to you a bit about the last series, which is a bit of a different collaboration. And also in size, they're all literally the size of a sheet of typing paper, aren't they? 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I know they were done after John had passed. And so maybe they're so intimate. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about
I did them all. I painted them in my studio on the floor. I just got out of the took the roll of canvas and unrolled it and laid the sheets of paper one through to the last one in two rows. And I just essentially I read them all very carefully you know, just because I thought this is going to influence me, this is what it did, I guess. So there was a lightness in the amount, I suppose, in John's work. We love, they say a lot, but there isn't a lot of text. There's small fragments here and there. And so it was easy to sort of, I don't know how easy, but basically it happened all quite quickly. I did them all, I think, in 2 sessions of maybe a half hour each. So, and basically just reacting to what was already there and
maybe we can just read a couple just so people have an understanding of what you're saying. A couple, for instance, is one, the eye saw much, the voice more. I mean, that's really beautiful. Another one, music, born through stillness, sound decay to live. And then another short one, let's see here. Facing age, as a face faces age, it appears that fear increases. That's just beautiful, Linda. And I'm just looking at them now, your multiple colors that you've used in response, celebratory colors almost, bright blue, yellow.
Yeah, and very thin, like a lot of water in the watercolor. And that's in part because I also really liked the fact that it was a big empty sheet, you know, with a few words on it, which I hadn't seen anybody else do that. And I just thought that's very like John, because he wants to isolate it down to what's the most basic or what can say the most. So I was trying to respond to that, you know, so a passage that might suggest something really elusive, like the sky or something, which is always changing. It was kind of interesting to apply color with those thoughts in my head. I mean, it's not, you're not copying something as much as inventing what you think might work with that sentence. Or,
well, there's a phrase that comes to mind when I saw these, and it's ekphrastic, and I think you know what that means. That's when a lot of people have written ekphrastic poetry in response to a visual image, painting, for instance. So an ekphrastic poem would be words that are trying to respond to the meaning they feel coming from the painting. And what this is, what your practice is here, is it's kind of reversing that, where you're responding in paint, in watercolor, to the words, trying to feel the meaning of those words. And when I look at them, I can see a couple of faces in here, very minimal, and eyes, and very suggestive marks, mostly abstract, but also some slightly figurative or some words almost written, you know, like the word I said earlier.
Right.
They're very, very delicate, and they look great in the gallery. Because you have I guess you saw yesterday or on Thursday, the large carborundum prints catching hold, and then these subtle, small framed works of the fragments that are moving around the gallery. It's kind of another kind of, two different aesthetics coming together in a sense.
Yeah.
The gallery kind of counterpointing each other and
in a sense, at that point, I knew that John was gone, so that's the other thing. So I was kind of feeling that, and at the same time, his words were there in front of me, so that was kind of strange. And the other thing is that when I'm in the studio, I always write things on the wall, potential titles or things I've heard or things I've read or, you know, just that kind of creates a momentum, the words on the wall.
And I have to say about that when you left your studio, you wanted to cover them all up, and people that took over your studio wanted you to leave them there.
I did leave one part was left above the couch, so it was requested, and then I thought, well, why not? And, well, mostly I didn't want to impose my views on 2 artists who are moving into the space, and I want them to be able to sort of own the space, you know, so that's why they were painted out. And I did take many photographs, actually, of all the birds on the wall.
Are you going to reproduce them? Are you going to reproduce them in your studio up there?
No, not likely. No, I'll do other things, but it's just fun to remember. But and they reminded me of John's words, you know, just his fragment, and basically putting them where he thought they made it a comfortable composition as well, I think, you know, one up high, one to the side.
Yeah, so, very much like concrete poetry, the space is in between, and it sort of looks back at the Two Heads collaboration where the spaces in between are as important, really, sometimes, not as important, but they really help amplify the meaning of whatever mark is there, be it a word or a brush stroke.
Yeah. Even the density of the color, you know, if you apply a color without much water, it's going to have a fullness that you sometimes want, but other times you want it almost pure water with just a hint of color. So you're almost like feeling the sky or feeling air that is not visible or, you know, it's subtle, but I really like those a lot just because of John's words, mostly, I guess, and then it was easy to react to because it felt like he was there.
Did you ever see John perform? I remember once seeing him, I think it was at Sala Rosa, where he was playing, and in the middle of drumming, he would just, you know, say out loud, very loud, three or four birds.
Yes, that's right.
Similar to the word fragments that are down here.
And
I don't know if people know, but, you know, John did write a lot, and these words do come, I think Paul mentioned it, in Thursday's talk from an unpublished manuscript that he's given Paul at the end, and there's really so many beautiful poems, really. I think poems, people might say word fragments, but they really are... poetry to me, very poetic.
There was a performance that he was part of. It's 17 musicians, and it's I don't know the exact name, but it's an orchestra that gets together regularly, and it's fairly random, but John just bangs at the drums and then eases off, and then he's really very, almost ruthless as a drummer, you know. He has a very potent kind of banging, you know, like.
Well, that sounds like, it sounds like how you described that black rectangle in the middle of the cash and hold, you know, that he raised it down with strength.
Yeah, that's right, and commitment. He's very committed to, okay, this is the mark, here it is, you know, so, and I respect that, because I think that we all, maybe he did too, I don't know, but you know, you look at your own work, and then you think, well, where am I going to go today? And the thinking is, in a sense, kind of pointless, but you sort of have to have that. And then after that, you just start, and then it gains its own momentum. You know, it's layering and whatever. And
coming from a place other than necessarily just the mind, right?
Yes, right. Yeah, it's a very visceral thing. I think painting is very visceral, as music is, because you're hearing it. And you can think about your ears, but it's not just your ears. It's something happening.
It has a texture, you know, an embodied material texture. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you much longer, so it's just been great talking to you. We miss you having a studio here in Montreal, and I hope you're going to be coming back. I know you have a daughter here, so maybe you'll be coming back to visit and see us all. At a time when you don't have to wear a mask. And
Well, I will be back. I'm back and forth. Because Catherine and I spent 20 years there, so when we both made lots of art there. So, and I love that
at
studio.
At the Visual Arts Center, I was very, very lucky to have you teaching a few workshops with us. So we
won't
be remembered up.
Yeah, me too. I remember everybody's work, which is always astonishing. I forget their names often. I don't know what their names are, but I just keep on going. And somehow the work speaks to me. Or I'll say, well, what were you doing before? And then it comes right into my head, which is kind of a strange thing to have that kind of no memory and memory.
you have a visual memory, that's for sure, right?
Yeah.
So listen, I'll let you go, And thanks again so much. And this this taped interview will be on the Visual Arts Center's Facebook page and McClure Gallery's Facebook page and on the website. So we'll talk soon and have a lovely day.
Yeah, and thank you, Victoria, for putting this together, and I really appreciate it.
My
and if you speak to Natasha, speak to her too, if you just
thank her.
I think she's great. Yeah.
She was.
Okay. And bye to John.
Okay.
Bye, Victoria.